You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Chat of the Wild is part of the HyperX Podcast Network. To find out more information and other great shows, go to podcast.hyperx.com. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Chat of the Wild. In this season, we are playing through The Legend of Zelda Spirit Tracks. We've been through this, haven't we? Is it the Spirit Tracks or is it Spirit Tracks?
I believe there's no article.
I think it's some Spirit Tracks. Legend of Zelda, some Spirit Tracks.
A Spirit Track. In our last episode, we rode on a choo-choo train, and we were good choo-choo boys.
That's actually a good way to describe that train, as we'll see going forward today. It's a little obsolete.
Before we get into it, we did mention in the last episode, BC is the outlier here, playing it in an odd format on the Wii U. You tinkered around a little bit with that, right, BC?
Yeah, so following Jeremy's guidance, I was able to access the Virtual Console's options for how you display DS games. So the default is it just puts a DS on the gamepad screen and on your TV, and so you basically have, you know, a subsection of the screen with a DS overlay in which to use. You also have the option to have the gamepad be the bottom screen and the TV be the top screen. You also have some side-by-side options, and probably the best option, but I haven't used it yet, was there's a vertical option, so you can turn the gamepad sideways, and so essentially you can have top-bottom, which would ideally use more screen real estate. I've been playing with the top screen on my TV and the bottom screen on the gamepad. It's worked out a lot better. It's a lot easier to control. The only problem I've had is if you go to the edge of the screen, sometimes it will register, like the edge of the screen displayed on the gamepad, it will register you as touching a different part of the screen. So like accidentally using an item when you were nowhere near the button to use that item.
Because that's on a different part of the screen.
Yeah.
So glad that we've moved on from the Wii U. Like, I don't want to get into it, but like, man, that tech, aged. It aged 3 days after it launched, right? Yeah. Like, we were already beyond it in the first week, where we were like, oh, this is a toy. Nintendo decided not to make a game console this generation. They made a toy.
It was perfect. There was no need for it to continue on. To, you know, it can age all at once. It's perfection already. Whatever.
BC, kind of foreshadowing here. Where's the microphone located on the Wii U again?
It's on the gamepad. Thank God.
There is one on there.
There's one on there. One
of the main bullet points I've written down today is, how the hell do you do this on a Wii U? Because it's quite a blow-heavy game.
It is. As someone who, not very well, but as someone who plays trombone, somehow blowing into the Wii U microphone is difficult. It was not a great experience, but we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think that's the one thing that all of these systems had, the 3DS, the Wii U, and the Switch. That's like the one thing the Switch didn't get, was like a microphone on it somewhere. Mm-hmm. Other than that, it's got pretty much all the same stuff that the other systems had.
Right. So, let's jump into the game. When we last left off, we got into Hyrule Castle. Did you guys wander around? There's not really anything to do in the town. There's a shop, but I don't think you don't waste your money on any of this stuff that you don't even know what it is right now, right?
I didn't buy anything yet, no.
I bought some of those postcard things because it said if you send them off, you can get more money. This is terrible. Like, I was sucked in, like, at the first thing. It's like somebody's knocked on my door and asked for a donation without a badge. I was like, yes. And I was like, I can send 10 of these. And then it says you can send 20 of them a day. And it's like, I wonder who is going through that. I mean, I'll say now, I haven't had any returns from them yet. You'll be the first to know. But
yeah, because I was holding off until like I had more info about it, and
yeah,
and
I
until I had enough money.
Are we sure that's not a Street Pass thing?
It may be. Well, it was Spot Pass. They didn't. Street Pass was the 3DS upgrade. Spot Pass was the original one. But I'm just being pedantic here. I apologize.
See, because I hope
I'm just going to get some replies from, you know, Tingle on a desert island being like, here you go, his double your rupees back or something. But
yeah.
Yeah,
because in the last one, there was this economy based around rare things you fished up, and... But that was like certain ones were expensive in your game would be expensive. It wouldn't be in someone else's game. So I'm wondering if that level of trading
there is
extends to this too.
Yep.
There is that. I do not believe it's related to this though.
Okay.
We'll figure out. Let's circle back around in the future when we figure out some more things on that. If you go into the castle, you basically get pushed around by some guards that are just sort of like, what are you doing here? And you're like, for the thing that's going on today. And they're like, oh, right, go.
And I'm supposed to be here.
Yeah, everyone is just sort of like, you're not supposed to be here. And then you're just like, I'm supposed to be here. And they're like, okay, I guess he's supposed to be here. And I don't understand. It's just really weird. We do get to meet a new character.
They make fun of her ceremony. They're like, oh, yeah, it's that engineer thing. All right, well, I guess kids are engineers these days.
We do meet Chancellor Cole here, and he comes by mocking the ceremony. That's the very first thing that we see of him, other than
the
two hats. Yes.
Yeah. Dude, the dude's got two hats. How baller is that?
How many times have you met somebody who had two hats, and they weren't just absolutely lovely?
Zero times. That has never happened to me.
Exactly.
I mean, you guys know I'm a hat aficionado. I would love to wear two hats.
I was just going to say, outside of a 90s hip-hop video, I don't think I've met someone with two hats, or really observed two hats in the wild, but...
He's got a great smile, you know, whatever. I like him.
Real sharp.
Seems nice.
So we go up to there, and we do have a very short ceremony that we get introduced to Zelda. She comes along. We are distracted by her... in a way where Cole then calls us out to be like, you do not look up at the princess, you peasant.
Well, we have a moment.
And
it's a meet cute, isn't it? It's a meet cute.
It really is, yeah.
Yeah.
So when he like yells about you looking up at the princess, the first thing that went through my mind was, if this were a Final Fantasy game, he would be the bad guy. Like, I was like, oh yeah, this would be the bad guy if this were a Final Fantasy game. And I was
exactly,
just thinking
right.
about how cool would it be if, like, Cole was the bad guy. And he's, like, bringing automobiles to the Spirit Track Island. And that's what it is. There's no evil overlord. There's just the criminality of the auto industry. But I digress.
Yep. Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. So we go through this very quick ceremony. We are now an official... train conductor.
Some guy brings out a thing from stage what is that, stage right?
It'd be stage left, because he was to the left of Zelda, to the right of us.
Okay I thought it was backwards when you're on never mind.
Just not important. Not at all important. We are now an official train conductor, and Zelda also passes us a secret note and then says, basically, don't let anybody see you with this note. I don't know how far I needed to leave. I left the castle before I read the note.
Well, I was going to say, like, the thing is, she's like, hey, check this note. Be cool. Don't talk about it. Make sure don't that let... the chancellor or the, you know, chancellor doesn't know. And then as he's walking out, he's like, says some line about, like, oh, those tracks won't be around forever, won't be around for much longer. And then he does this big, like, sharp teeth smile. And I was like, yeah, you know, he is the bad guy.
He's just got a nice, you know, mischievous grin of, you know, style to him. I like him. I like him. I think he's fine. Yeah.
Two hats.
Two hats.
You're right. You're right.
It really is.
Before we got into the castle, there you can check the mail, and the mail dude shows up. He doesn't fly this time, but it's the same kid. And he kind of comes up, chugga-chugga-choo-choo-ing.
Yes.
And BC's doing a wonderful reenactment of it right now. But he's like, hey, it was a little weird. People were like, don't read me the mail. You're reading my mail out loud. Please don't do that. So now I give it to people, and I put it in your pocket. So you got to read it in the pocket. And in every Zelda game, we've had to read mail out of a pocket. I just never remember to read it. And in this case, I was like, yeah, I have to get far away to read this letter. And by the time I got far enough away, I ended up in the room where I needed to be, where the letter told me to go.
I thought you were going to be like, I went back to the original island to try to get as far away as possible to read this letter.
I got
to
be a secret. I transferred the data over to Phantom Hourglass, and then I went sailing around there, and I opened it.
So the letter basically tells us, come back to my room. Here is a map on which way to go. A very useless map, which is basically like, it says like, it circles the spot for you to go to, but then it also circles another spot. And it's just, and it does, this is the first time we get prompted of, do you want to write this down? And it's like, no, this is useless. I just know, go to that spot. Why would I waste my time writing this down? I don't need to dodge any traps to get up to this room.
This pot has a blue rupee sometimes. You want to write that down?
I felt dumb because I was looking down at the gamepad, and they were like, yeah, you want to write this secret path down? And I was like, there's no path. It's just my map. And then I was
exactly.
Like, I look up at my TV, and it's like, oh, yeah, duh, duh.
So we go back up to there. You don't have to sneak yet, but it made it, when I got up there, I felt like I did. And because the guards are patrolling as you're going up there, but they don't react to you. I think if you went up and talked to them, they would say like, you're not supposed to be up here, but that's it.
We're going to come to refer to this point as a happier time. In about 10 minutes time.
Yes. But they're all still weirdly like drone like, where they when you talk to them, they're just kind of like, man, everything's going great here. I love Chancellor Cole.
I love walking in circles.
This is so
love
cool.
Love two hats.
I love two hats, dude.
Get me those two hats.
Two
please.
Hats.
Gosh.
And the only ones that give you any guff really are the ones that are standing in front of doors that they don't want you to go in. They're like, hey, you get out of here, you know.
Sure. Makes sense.
Rabble.
We go up to Zelda's room, and we get a cutscene where she basically explains to us something's going on with the towers, and I want to figure out what is happening with the towers. And so she asks us to help her sneak out of the castle. She does give us the recruit outfit. This is the Link outfit.
This is the
green tunic. But in this world, we now have it where everyone just wears those if you work at the castle.
Yeah,
that's all
you
it
know,
means.
Everyone went through their 10-year-old ceremony to be like the hero kid.
But no, that's not this. This is a uniform to work as security in the castle.
Yeah. They just kind of aged it up to it's a uniform now. It's symbolic, you know. But because this is sort of the same world, as that game.
Oh boy. We get to something where I'm like, what are you talking about? Like,
yeah.
We'll get to that.
Making our way.
So this is now where we get our first taste of the dual controls that we're going to be dealing with through, I assume, the entirety of this game. What we have to do is where we could control Link by touching the screen and he'll go the direction that we say. Now we can guide Zelda down a path similar to the way that we did the boomerangs or the bomb shoes in the last game.
Mm-hmm.
And she's very slow. And this game is going to take... I feel like this game is going to feel like it takes so much longer than the last game because... Not only are we having to move ourselves, we are constantly going to have to guide someone else along. Fortunately, we do have a button that lets us call her where she will follow us, but we also have to manage if we are allowed to be seen or if she's allowed to be seen and we're not and all of this stuff. You get through all this stuff. Now you can talk to a guard to distract them, to make them look another way, toss stuff to make them look somewhere. And here's the thing. I like this, but only as an improvement over what we have had to deal with before. This is an improvement in this world. This is something where, like, if I only had these two games to play on a desert island, I would be like, man, I love this game because it let you do this.
By any other standards, though, this this was a horrible experience. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but did you guys do it on your first go?
Yes.
By the skin of my teeth, and not for my own actions, I think. I mean, I certainly was the one who made the input, but I just I got lucky somehow, and some things just kind of fell in place.
Because I mucked up near the end of that bit. Had to go, there's no checkpointing, so you don't go, well, I got past three of the guards, so...
Right.
No, all the way back to the beginning. And then because I was frustrated, I was like, right, I can just walk all the way through. I can do this quickly. Which worked up until pretty much the same point. And then all the way back... I tell you what, I drafted an email saying, sorry, guys, but I don't think this season's going to be for me. No, I didn't. But...
keep that in drafts.
I did wonder at one point, I was like, is it just going to let me skip it? Is it just going to say, are you having trouble? Like, you know, a lot of modern Nintendo games do. And so, you know, you can put on like a golden armor and then run through.
The game's like, no, this is the hand-holdy part. This is where we're holding your hand. Reacts to sound was annoying, where you have to get it just right, and just controlling the two of them together and trying to get and like you have to distract him by like throwing a rock somewhere and he'll turn around. Like, I was so angry.
I think the only time I actually got caught was when I didn't realize in the very beginning you could go outside, and I thought I was supposed to do something, like talk to, there's a guy blocking the downward path, and I thought I had to talk to him to get him to go away. And when you talk to him, he turns around, and then he sees Zelda there.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, go outside. And then everything else was fine. I kind of controlled Zelda like I controlled the bomb shoes in... Phantom Hourglass, where I was like, okay, I know I need to time this right, so to give myself time to do whatever I need to do, I'm just going to draw her in circles so that she runs around in circles, and then I have plenty of time to time out
so that she's doing something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
get that step count up.
That, yeah.
So we make our way out of here, and we then get a cutscene where this Zelda game is going full anime, baby. We get on the train and we're heading out, and then the train tracks disappear.
We get to the train to get on, and she's like, what's up, Alphonse? Or Alfonso or whatever.
Yes,
she's like,
yes.
How's it going? We have history. What's up, homie?
He mentioned earlier that he used to work at the castle.
Yeah, but he's but now we find out his trope is the warrior who has walked away from battle and has become a lowly farmer or train conductor in this case.
Right.
You know, they're trans. Yeah, that's translatable. Farmer, train engineer.
So the way this scene plays out is we get sort of thrown off the tracks because they just disappeared out from underneath us. The train is like, you know, almost about to fall over because it doesn't know where to go and all that stuff, because that's how trains work. They get confused otherwise. And then Chancellor Cole shows up here. They see the tower that we were looking for is it getting engulfed in purple evil and all of that stuff.
Yeah, it's doing some real Ghostbusters stuff.
And then a demon train comes out of the sky.
Also Ghostbusters. You know.
Floats above us.
I wish you all could have seen my face, like, just during this cutscene, because the highs and lows where I was like, oh, it's kind of hilarious that this train flew off the tracks. Is that a demon train? And like, as soon as I saw the demon train, I was like, I hate this game.
Yeah.
I can't take it seriously. And then as the cutscene went on, I loved it more and more. But
so we then see Cole, and he shows his true form, where he takes off his two hats and shows his two horns.
Oh, no.
Exactly. You can't show two hats in the first act if you don't take them off in the third act, revealing a set of horns. That is just... See, that's just the rule, isn't
it? Exactly. All right. One hat. All right. He jumped the gun here.
And he basically explains that he's a demon and this was his plan the whole time.
Of course.
To bring the demon lord back to life, which, again, we'll get into. I'll get into that a little bit later on that terminology because it upsets me very much.
Quite.
And we also get introduced to another anime badass by the name of Byrne, B-Y-R-N-E. He shows up behind him, and he's Cole's bodyguard.
Yeah.
And he's got a metal claw arm and all this, and he looks like a cool assassin with some crazy eyes. And,
it seems like, yeah, he's got history with Alfonso. They kind of go at it.
Yeah, Alfonso pulls out his blade, and they fight, and it's cool. But, of course, Alfonso has not been practicing his blade as much. He got pushed aside.
Cramped quarters on the train, you know. He gets knocked onto this train, and we just see how comically tiny. This is why I said earlier, like, Choo Choo pretty much is a perfect description for our train at this point. It is very, very small, and he seems to be taller than it as he slumps off of it.
So Byrne starts to move closer towards Zelda. We jump in the way, and he just backhands us, and we go flying. It'd be funny if it wasn't, like, real serious right now.
Yeah, he wails on him.
But then, as he's getting closer to Zelda, then Cole just jumps up and casts a spell on Zelda and knocks her out, and then also knocks her soul out of her body. And they look at it and just, like, and we'll find out later, like, what their plan actually is. But they look at the soul, and it just, like, wanders off, and they're just like, eh. I almost thought they were like, what's that thing? Oh, well.
Like, no, this is what happens when you kill a girl.
These are two children as well. Yeah. That have just taken an absolute beat. And I know last week I said that I'm going to try and devise some sort of parallel between the Industrial Revolution. And I know that the Industrial Revolution was rife with child labor.
Exactly.
But I think, you know, this level of kind of mistreating the youth is, it's only aiding my argument, to be honest.
One of them gets backhanded across the room. The other one gets killed, ostensibly.
Yeah, but maybe, like, the dictionary definition of death. your soul was removed from your body. But we black out here, and we're going to black out for a break here on this episode. So when we get back, we're going to talk more about the spirit and the tracks.
The Chat of the Wild podcast is part of the HyperX Podcast Network. HyperX is our sponsor and the maker of the acclaimed Quadcast and Quadcast 5 microphones. Quadcast USB mics look and sound amazing, and they're packed with features. With four selectable polar patterns, you'll get great sound no matter what you're recording. The included shock mount and pop filter mean you won't have to shell out extra cash for a great setup. Then there's the eye-catching LED indicator and tap-to-mute sensor, so you can tap in and tap out to stop broadcasting accidents. It's time for you to tap in with the HyperX Quadcast and Quadcast S.
Hi, it's me, Jeremy Parrish, co-host of the Retronauts Podcast, the only video game history podcast that's been around so long, it's also a part of video game history. Every week, one of the motley rabble who host this show leads a deep dive into the past, whether it's to break down a classic franchise, learn more about a timeless game from its creator, or just wallow in nostalgia. Relive history with Retronauts, here on the HyperX Podcast Network.
Take a time machine back to before the world went to hell, around the year 2000.
The 80s and 90s were so rad.
The movies, the music, the TV, the games, that's what I want to talk about.
If you're cool enough,
join us and listen to Less Than 2000, because that's all we talk about.
Adam and Chad live
Less Than 2000.
Now part of the
HyperX
Podcast Network.
All right, so we are back. We're waking up. And Alfonso is passed out next to us. We're in a bed in a room that I guess we could have gone into earlier. I didn't, so I wasn't sure where I was at the time. We get stopped by the caretaker there. I didn't catch his name. Again, this is the thing, like, they don't say the names. Like, you can only ever get someone's name if someone in that room mentions them. And that sucks in these games, especially when you're creating a podcast where you're supposed to describe these characters.
You see, there's not enough space on the screen to show the dialogue and have their little name above it as well.
We have two screens. Hide it somewhere on the other screen.
I cannot argue with that point. You're absolutely right. They've dropped the bloody ball with that one.
Maybe a bio on the top screen of the character.
Yeah.
This is the guy after all. You'd think he'd be important. I think he's the guy who brought us our certificate during the ceremony. So,
but was it stage left or right, Brian?
But was it? We'll never know because we can't read his name, or his line, or his stage directions.
As we leave that area, we get a cutscene where we see a ghost. Zelda Ghost is floating around trying to get everyone's attention, and nobody sees her except for us because we're
very sad about it.
And so we go, you can go and follow her. I assume if you want the game to move forward, you're going to go and follow her. You're free to do whatever you want now at this point, right? The princess is dead. The kingdom has fallen. Whatever you want to do now.
Buy more tickets. Yes. Buy more lottery tickets. Whatever. There's grass outside town. I can just buy lottery tickets till I'm dead.
So if you make it back up to her room, we get a cutscene where she's confused about what's going on, doesn't know what's happening, is blown away that Cole is actually evil and all of this stuff.
Who could have seen it coming? Two hats. Who could have seen it coming?
I did like there is a little sight gag here where she's just like thinking about stuff and like stuck in her head and doesn't realize that she's like floating up towards the ceiling.
That was pretty good.
Yeah. And she's like, oh right, I'm not used to this, sorry.
That was adorable.
Float back down. She then tells us, okay, this we've got to go and figure this stuff out. So we need to go to the Tower of Spirits, which is behind us, behind the castle and everything. Even though it's messed up, there's a little entrance, we can go and check it out. And
we get a back road.
Yeah.
Takes us right to the tower.
Before we go, here, take this flute that we have. And this is the spirit flute, which you could have looked at it earlier. And I believe it just prompted you of just being like, oh, this looks like an interesting item.
Look at that.
Chekhov's flute.
Chekhov's flute, yes. Everything's just going to be Chekhov's blank. So we go through the back area, as Zelda tells us to, and we get stopped by another guard who does the classic, there's monsters on the other side, you need a sword before you can go through here.
Yeah, I was getting kind of weirded out by the fact that every time I passed jars, I still didn't have a sword. Like, mm-hmm. I was, at some point, they're going to have to give us a sword, right?
Nope, only a train. you're gonna run everyone over.
You can't give a child a weapon. You can put him in charge of a heavy locomotive, but absolutely nothing with the blade, with the sharp edge. Oh, he could take someone's eye out.
After we got backhanded by the demon guy for a second, I thought Link was about to hit him with a train, and that was how they made their escape. I was really looking forward to it.
You have to line up every enemy on the tracks. That's what this whole game is going to be. You got to wait until every enemy gets on the track.
Well, no. If you could use buttons in this game, you'd press Y to hijack the demon train, and then you'd steer that into the bad guys.
All right. If you go and wander around a bit more, because it was not clear to me on where I was supposed to go, you'll eventually find a training room in this castle. Yeah. Where a guy is just like, hey, kid, you don't have a sword. Here, take the sword.
Why don't you have the sword?
Yeah.
Everyone else is like, you should probably go talk to Terry. He's over that way. Like, everyone else in the castle just kind of is like, that way.
This is where we get the recruit sword, which, for whatever reason, this game is starting off in a weird way to me, where our outfit is not anything special. It is a uniform for security guards. The sword
given
that we're
to us to help us blend in with
everybody
the corrupt security guards.
I don't know about corrupt. They're just
at this point they just don't really care. They're like, Chancellor Cole's great. Two hats, man.
Yeah,
two
man.
Two hats.
Yeah, man. That's not necessarily corrupt. So after he gives us a sword, then he's just like, well, you can't leave until you show me how to use that thing. We get our training. The three of us were already well equipped with this. Jonathan, did it take you a second to get used to these controls again?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be a common thing where every time I turn the game on to play the next bit, I'm going to try and control it with the D-pad.
Yep.
But there we go. There we go. It's fun.
Hey, the trains help with that. You kind of are railroaded to tracks, and you're not in a boat that you think you could steer, but you have to actually draw on the map to steer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. After this, we are good to go. I did go and buy a shield.
Yeah, me too.
I don't know why. I just thought, I've got enough money for a shield. I'll go buy one. Maybe it'll be useful.
I feel like I should have one.
I clearly had rupees to burn after buying all those postcards. Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
I also found a lot of treasure chests. I found like three or four, and so I was able to get like 150 rupees altogether.
Fancy lad.
Out of here. So,
I haven't gotten the tickets yet, because each time I got to a choice like that, where it was like the first time I took the shield, because I had enough to get one, either tickets or shield. And the second time I was like, I should take the potion. I'm going to play it safe. So next time I find myself near a shop, I will be buying those tickets. But there didn't seem to be any urgency in them. They weren't really telling me much about them.
No, you're absolutely right. Again, I look at my decisions here, and I think I'll have to...
You're gonna
left
be,
a lot
you know,
to be desired. You should see me when I go to the shop. Like, I'll go to the shop to get milk and come back with like, sorry, say to my wife, like, oh, sorry, darling, I didn't get the milk, but they only had one turkey left, so you said you wanted a pet.
Magic beans.
Exactly, yeah.
You literally just made me, you made me have to correct in my head of like, wait, do you guys just buy turkeys as pets over there?
No, we don't. No, but, I might try and encourage that as an idea. I might just try and pepper some absurd rumors about how we actually live in Britain.
So we go out the back, and we get to fight our first enemies. Of course, this is an enemy we have not seen before. This is a Spinut. S-P-I-N-U-T. Spinut, however you want to pronounce it.
I just took it like spin nut, because does it spin at all? I guess it doesn't spin at all.
No. Honestly, it looked like to me they put too much detail into a character for the DS. Like, it's just so hard to tell what this thing is supposed to be. And I'm like, y'all could have simplified this down. Like, you didn't need to put that much into it because we're not going to be able to see it in this grainy screen.
It does look really nice on the gamepad, I will say.
Okay, well, maybe they were doing it with that in mind the whole time.
The system hasn't come out yet, but you're going to love it.
One day this DS will be the size of a house.
It's going to be huge. Just you wait, kid.
Yeah, I got the feeling that it was a Goomba that just had like a bunch of MS Paint splashed on it to cover it up.
According to the Zelda wiki, the name is derived from a portmanteau of spine and nut. So I guess it would be Spinut.
Okay.
It's got more of a punch to it. I like it.
Sure. We go out this back area, and there is a guard that's being attacked. If we save him, he mentions that, oh, there's this area that I think something fishy's going on over there. Maybe we should look at it. And it's the side of a wall, but there's also bombs nearby. I think we can put two and two together here.
Mm-hmm.
You take a bomb to it, you blow it up.
Did anybody hit the wall? Because it does do the thing where it makes a different sound.
Yes, I had to double check because it all looks the same of exactly where
they didn't
really
tell you really well where it was, so.
I just threw the bomb and got it first try, so.
We go through a cave here. We get our first key door. We then get our first little puzzle where it puts some, has these stones on there that say, do this before this one, and then this one goes after this one.
Ugh.
And it was different enough. You know, we've been through a dozen of these kind of puzzles in Phantom Hourglass that I actually was like, oh, this is actually a different puzzle than before. The way that they're telling all this stuff is different. Like, okay, cool. It's still boring and dumb.
Oh, yeah. I tried to weigh up whether or not it was worth my time to go back and read them or just, you know, brute force my way through it and just do process of elimination.
Sure.
I did go back. I went back and read them.
I guess some of the ones I liked more, I wouldn't say I liked the most, but some of the ones I generally had a favorable reaction towards in Phantom Hourglass were ones that didn't like spell out, here's going to be the first one and the last one you'll do. They sort of leave it for you to figure that out, where they'll say like, well, here, this one goes after this one, but they never, you know. When they leave that vague, it makes the puzzle a little bit more fun to solve, I guess.
So we go through all of that. We get a scene of us going into the entrance of the Spirit Tower, and we meet a new character in here as soon as we get in there. Of a
Anju,
a version they took a name and molded it a little bit. This is Aunt Jean, and she's a weird looking character. She's got wheels. She's not in a wheelchair. She has wheels.
She's train lady.
Yeah, little granny choo-choo.
And I don't know. We'll mention it now because we'll bring it up later. She is one of the locomotes. That is the race of train people. This game is weird.
Come on, baby.
It's around about here that the history of the Industrial Revolution may make some diversions.
Yes. This is where it all changes.
So there's a little bit of the Anju to this from Majora, but then also it's like, engine. She's a train engine.
Do you think that Councillor Cole is a reference to coal-powered steam engines? Industrial Revolution analogy is back on, guys.
See, that I was trying to figure out, like, do any of these names really stand for anything? But
speaking of names that don't stand for anything, she does mention about how their goal is to resurrect the Demon King. Which Demon King? Well, even when I look up the term Demon King in the Zelda fandom wiki, it says Demon King may refer to either of the following characters.
Did you mean
Ganon, or did you mean Demise, or did you mean
that thing,
Maladus? Who
that thing from that one game that no one plays.
They need to drop the then, don't they? You can't be called the Demon King.
Well, the thing is there's also a Demon Lord. Like, there's a Demon Lord, which is different than a Demon King, and that's fine. Girahim is the Demon Lord. But, like, they could have named him anything else. And they used the name that was, like, to be fair, at this time, Demise, they haven't not put Demise into the canon.
Okay, yeah.
And honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if they just forgot. Like, the people that were writing this never played this game. So, yeah, she explains to us Maladus is the demon king in this game that they're trying to resurrect, and that they are going to do that and what they're going to do with the demon king is put its spirit into a body. Which body? Well, they happen to just find an empty body that they took from Zelda. And this triggers Zelda in a way that I loved.
Yeah. She only comments on her feistiness. What was that?
This game has been very up and down, but the cutscenes have been amazing, and this is the best one. Like, Zelda has actual character in this, and I was really worried, since it wasn't Tetra, that Zelda was going to be just bland, like, stick in the mud. But this is an amazing scene.
See, this is what happens when you don't turn Zelda into a statue in the first 15 minutes of the game. So they explain all this stuff and basically say about, like, okay, in order to stop all this, we have to bring the tower back together. And so go ahead and we need you to go up there. And then Zelda's just like, you had better get up there and you better fix this right now. I need my body back.
Way up in your face, like closer and closer and closer and closer.
It is borderline like Japanese horror style, like the way her face looks, like getting in Link's face, and she's making just this like moaning noise as she gets closer each time to him. It was kind of creepy, but in a way that I'm like, in this cartoon world, this is great. This is good right here. We start to go up there. And then Anjean basically explains, like, you're not going to be able to go up there by yourself. You need help. And then Zelda's just like, well, who are we going to get to do all this?
You help him. Everybody we know is either passed out or stupid.
She even mentioned getting the, I believe she said, the trainer that trained us with the sword to come and help us. And it's like that random guy. But Anjean says, like, look, just go help him. Like, time is ticking. And
They play it for, she takes forever to turn around. They seem like they're going to play it for the, I'm not supposed to do that. I'm the princess, but like.
See, I took it as her just, I could see her turning around just being like, what did you just say? Like, how dare you? I am a princess.
Yeah, but you can also fly and go through walls. You're probably going to be quite helpful in this sort of scenario.
But then, okay, this is where we get into the dumb Zelda tutorial stuff, where we go up there, we get a scene where we get attacked, or we are prompted to be attacked. We could just, like, run away, or you could take the hit. You go back downstairs again, and Jean says, oh yeah, there's guards up there. Collect these three things and then you can hit them. Then you go back up the exact same way again and it actually starts. So, and then also, as we collect the first of the golden tears that we need to power up our sword to stun these statues, it's the Dark Nuts from the last game.
The Phantom Ganons or whatever.
Anjean comes in over the intercom to explain stuff to us. And I'm just like, why couldn't you have done that when we were there the first time?
Well, that would have been too much talky-talk for one talky-talk session.
We weren't sitting in the sacred zone, Jeremy. The intercoms only work in the sacred zones.
Come on. Right.
Maybe.
That's how it works.
She just got this Sahasrara intercom system installed. She wants to use it. But it only works
in the Sahasrara brand intercoms.
Yeah.
For when you need to talk to a boy.
In the dungeon.
So we go through and we collect those things. We hit them. Then we get this cutscene where we stun them. And then the Dark Nut is just like stunned for a second and then turns around and just being like, oh, you're screwed, and like starts to bring the sword down, and the Zelda is like, it's weird because everything is black around us. It's just like this weird single moment where the only thing that exists is me and Zelda and this murderous statue, and she, with her spirit, goes in and touches and gets sucked into the dark nut, and it changes colors, and now we are introduced to, I don't know, what do you call this? Phantom Zelda, I think, is what they call it?
Sure.
Yeah.
Ghost
in the
yeah,
Zelda?
So then...
Shelda?
Then we basically get back to the original tower puzzles that we had in the last game. Fortunately, without a timer on this one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think we necessarily need to go through all of these things again. You wander around. You got to find some stairs. There's only like one or two floors I think we go up on this one. So it's fairly quick.
Yeah.
You get up to the top and you get a map. It's a stone chunk that has a carvings on it that is the map of this world.
Yeah.
Similar to, although I guess it looks like a stone chunk. It could also just be worn parchment.
It looks very hard and chunky, yes.
Slabby. Mm-hmm.
Yes, slabbish.
we get a little warp thing, we go back down, and then this is where Angie explains that she is one of the is she a sage, I guess, in this world? As she was she's kind of is.
Zelda uses that term before we really even get an idea of what Angine is. Angine also starts this conversation off by being like, you're just like your grandma or whatever, or your ancestor.
Yes.
I don't want to draw an unnecessary parallel or go off on a tangent that's too obscure, but do you guys think that her hairstyle resembled the Minish Cap?
Oh.
I see it now.
Yeah.
Sure.
I'm just going to leave that one out there.
It could also be a smokestack. You know, like smoke coming out of a whatever
train.
The shaft is on the train. If the
chimney?
I see it.
But I don't think it is chimney. It a chimney on a train?
Yeah.
Is it still a chimney? Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know the rules.
I'm the one with the Wikipedia page open on the Industrial Revolution.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Get on it, man.
Yeah.
You got to be ready to defend this headcanon at any time.
So she explains to us that we need to go and talk to the next sage named Gage.
Of course.
And that we need to find we need to reawaken each of these temples, and that will fix the tower and that will save everything. So this is where we are first prompted with our first real
get out
there.
On
the term. Our first get out there, as they call it. our first real mission here, and that is to collect these things and do all that. Up until this point, all we were trying to do was be a train boy, and now we're a magic train boy.
Luckily, there's no other trains on the track to mess with us in this section, really.
In this section, yes. I'm very confident that demon train is going to come back and mess with us.
Oh.
The thing I thought that was weird about this is that we get train combat, but really it's just honk your horn so that the bad guys go
away. Yeah, horn bonus.
Horn combat.
Love my horn combo.
Yeah,
you gotta be careful, because if you're like me, you have a tendency to just always have the horn on, and it doesn't register, as we'll see with different critters and animals that are on the... They won't hear the horn if it's always playing. You know, it's sort of that relative thing.
Those enemies that we come across here first are called Snurgles.
Snurgles are like the flying elephant thing.
Yep.
We've got Moinks are the pigs.
Oh, I like that. I like Moink. That. Snurgles dumb, though. Now, when we get on our new train that we have, because our old train is broken and, you know, it doesn't have tracks, so we can't use it.
Our friend fell on it.
Yeah. And we get the new magic train that was at the tower. So
this train very is convenient. She even says, like, business. She's like, oh, you need to go on the train track. So, well, why don't you have, I don't know, this train?
Why don't you take this
pulls
train
it out of
that's
her
here.
Convenient pocket.
Let me think. Something for a train track. What do we have that could work for a train track?
Well, it's a tough question to her because she seems to also be able to work on a train track.
Right. Does she? Can she just hop on those too? She's I like, assume.
I would think so.
Anyway, we get prompted with the map now, and it does make us draw our path, but
it
we can't
lets us.
Freely. Does it let us? Can we just go?
Yeah, you can just go and pay okay, attention to okay. the switches or whatever, or make a path and then deviate from that path. All it really does is set the switches in place for you on the path that you've chosen.
Oh, okay. Well, that's still convenient. So the first thing that we need to do, I know you could go to the little forest area, I think, but I'm gonna guess that it stops you.
It doesn't really like let you get out.
Okay.
I tried on the way to the castle.
We need to go to the town of Whittleton. When we get in there, we get there and it does that classic Zelda thing where the two houses that you go into, they just say go talk to the chief. Mm. And then when you go talk to the chief,
well,
she
actually,
says,
you can talk to them a bunch, and they will eventually start saying a whole lot of other stuff. There's one guy that's like, Chief's my buddy. But the other guy's like, I'm tired of living in the sticks. And then after I talk to him five times, he's like, I want to live in the lap of luxury. I'm like, ooh, progression. And and then after that, he's like, hey, there's games out back, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
I went out there. There weren't games. There was a beehive.
Not yet.
Stung
we
need.
I think we needed an item for
it. That was
it,
a horrible game.
But yeah, like I talked to him. Like it was a horrible game. This is
game.
A horrible game.
That was a beehive. That's a bad game.
God, you're rubbish at this.
But yeah, like and it does that thing where like when Zelda got closer and closer and closer to us, I talked to this guy like 20 times to finally get all this info out of him, and.
Do you tie
and
him
each
down,
time
or?
You tap on him, Link takes another like half step closer. And so each time I talk to him, Link is getting more and more intense and just closing in on his face.
Goodness he me. Wasn't actually talking to you. Your ear was inside of his brain.
Yeah.
And you could just hear his thoughts.
Where were these people?
This guy, the whole time I've seen you, I didn't know what you were confused about. This guy was in the first house. The other guy is in the middle of town. He's walking around, and he says a whole bunch of stuff. But, like, you know, hey, thanks for getting the tracks back. We need to transport our lumber. Hey, we're a lumber town, and so we are responsible, and we replant trees. Also, there aren't many women here, and that's a problem. That was the final thing that, like, he had like five different things, and that was the last one I got him to say. And I was like, all right, well, I think
BC,
I figured out everything that you just need to know about Whittleton.
BC, did you go to this town?
No, I went immediately to where
okay.
to Gage is.
Oh, okay.
Okay,
so you,
so
just
you
did
could,
it?
You could go to the Lost Woods.
Yeah, so I was confused about whether or not it was a Lost Woods scenario because I drew the thing and it seemed like I was stuck in the same place. And I was like, everything looks like it's repeating, but it doesn't seem like I'm not moving anywhere. And as soon as I was about to be like, okay, I'm in a Lost Woods scenario, the gate showed up and I was where Gage was.
Incredible.
You took the right path at the end and
yeah,
all of a sudden
you
were there.
You brute forced it, so
yeah.
Hell yeah.
When you get into there, what you're supposed to do is follow the first three branches, but then not the fourth.
The fourth tree is a liar.
I want that on a mug or a t-shirt or something, because if you live your life by that creed, then I think you're gonna be all right. The fourth tree
I believe
is a liar.
I get that tattooed on my neck.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I believe the way the game framed it is it has a bad sense of direction. But it's a liar.
I want it to be actually like morally like corrupt, and it is a liar.
Absolutely. I mean,
here's the thing, y'all. I didn't change directions manually at any point. the thing just kept going, and I ended up at the place.
You must. Like, I mean, well,
like Luigi always wins Mario Party. Just let it go.
So I never went to this town, and anyway. I was like, "All right, well, I guess there's just an empty place where Gage is." So now
I know. So we go through all of this stuff. So we go through all of this stuff, and we end up at the Forest Sanctuary. There's some puzzles to solve, all that stuff. You figure it out. You bomb some things. We see our first puzzle where you have to look at your scenery, and then you go up to a thing and you have to draw a line or lines to be like match the pattern. Uh-huh. And so we're going to have more of those, obviously.
Hooray.
This is where, yeah, then we go into here, we meet Gage, and he tells us about the song that we have to play in order to do what we need to do. And
hey,
he teaches
you
us.
That, you got that flute. What's yeah, up?
He teaches us his first song. Now, this is very reminiscent.
I knew it was going to come back.
This reminded me a lot of when Wind Waker, where we had to meet the spirits and play a song with them to unlock a thing. But here is where I had a realization. The last time I played this game, this is where I stopped because I thought something was wrong. Because during the tutorial on how to use it, it just takes forever for it to be like, okay, I think you've got it.
I think you did.
And I was like, I'm doing the same three colors that they're telling me to do in sync with it over and over again. Nothing's happening.
You gotta do it just right.
It stopped doing it when I gave up, when I just stopped doing things. And then he was just like, okay, I think you got it. And I'm just like, I remember this now.
I'm sure the phrasing of it, it says, do you want to practice? And you practice until you go, yeah, I've got it now. So yeah, it's entirely up to you.
I guess.
It basically says, like, hey, once you think you've got it down, then we can try for real.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just thought, I was like,
even
I'm playing
the song.
Even when
I tried it for real, I did not do well.
Yeah. This is where we get to talk about how'd we all blow, guys? PC, why don't you start?
This is the single most difficult thing I've done in the last two games.
I was like, am I really this old that, like, I can't... And it gets worse going ahead. And we didn't talk a lot about our past with this game, but I beat this game, I played through this game on a trip to San Diego and Mexico in like 2010 or 2011. And getting to this part, I believe I got to this part on the plane. And oh no, there's no way that like it was just noise in my ear. And so anytime I opened up the flute, it was just constantly on. Like, there was no off. There was no way to pull it away from my face to make it stop. It was... And so it did not go well in the plane. I made it work. I got past it, but it was through toil and bloodshed.
On the original DS model, so I'm playing this on a 3DS, and the microphone is sort of at the bottom nearest you, so you sort of...
Yeah.
Like it's in the little corner, yeah.
Yeah. Whereas I'm sure, did the microphone used to be on the bridge in the middle?
It was in
DS?
The center. Yes.
I
wanted to bring
that
up.
That would have been easier.
Yeah. Yes.
Because it's quite difficult because you have to control the... You're sort of holding... It's like you're eating your 3DS with, like, a sandwich whilst also trying to draw a shape on top of the sandwich, which I don't know. I don't know about you, but I don't have much practice of doing that sort of thing.
Nope.
I'm not sure how Americans eat sandwiches, but here in Britain, you know, we've got our sandwich mittens that we usually use.
Right, of course.
But yeah, it was tricky. But also, I will say that once I got the hang of it, and you have that moment where you're playing your duet with him. It genuinely felt quite magical. And I was just like, this is It reminded me of when in like Link's Awakening, when you'd go up to, you could go up to the egg and play the Ballad of the Windfish with whatever instruments you had.
Right.
You didn't necessarily need all of them. You just go up there and it will play it with like four or five or six of them. As a kid, I loved that, and I would always. Every time I got a new instrument, I was like, "Oh, I wonder how it sounds now." And like having another instrument in the mix, oh, it's lovely. It's like bringing in a harmony when you come back for that second verse. Oh, yes, please.
I get some of that, but this in this game, it's never felt more like, because like in that you've got multiple instruments. In Wind Waker, you're like conducting the other person, and it sounds good. This one, it's never felt more like, hey, I need a kid who can play a few notes on the bass while I jam.
Yeah.
And you keep kid, beat. Just, I need you to, here, look, I put Post-its on the notes to tell you, blue, orange, yellow.
Root, third, fifth. Root, third, fifth.
Let me offer this up right now, is that I'm colorblind. And I have a real difficulty telling the difference with the colors on these notes.
They don't make it helpful.
Imagine if you bought this game and were both colorblind and asthmatic. You would not be able to play this game, period.
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Game Genie can't help.
No, exactly. It's the reason why I never beat Metroid Prime Hunters on the DS. And apart from that, it was horrible to control. But the final boss on that was like, all the enemies were like color-coded depending on like what gun you needed to use to fight them. And I never beat that. But with a bit of patience, you can get the colors of the spirit flute.
People have been
correct
better about that these days, which is nice. So
yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. My little disabled eyes.
But yeah, that there's like Mario Party games. I know that like my friend was like, I'm just screwed on this one. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I also thought it was kind of weird that this is the tutorial, but literally 30 seconds before you do this, you can use the flute to awaken the time stones, knowledge stones, whatever they're called.
Yeah.
The stone guys.
Yeah, whatever those ones are. Gossip stone type thingies.
Gossip stones.
Yeah, the gossip stones. And I felt really clever because I saw the two floating like colors and the pitches, and I was like, oh, this is for me to play. I'm playing like these pitches. And then immediately after that, it gives me a tutorial. It's like, all right, well, thanks for explicitly stating everything I just figured out.
Yeah.
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 After we do that too, there's also, so that was the Song of Awakening is what we learned there. And then that with what BC was talking about. And then we'll also get the Song of Healing on another stone. Mm. But the thing that annoyed me is that was not the Song of Healing. they called it that, but it's a different song. And so I was a little disappointed. Maybe there's something in there.
Different timeline, Jeremy.
So yeah, we learn a couple of these things here. So the Song of Healing is interesting because a fairy goes and tells you, play the song and I'll give you hearts back, but you can only do it once in a dungeon. And then as soon as I got into this dungeon, I accidentally played it and I was like, oh well.
Accidentally play a pan flute song in spirit tracks?
I screwed up the two colors. I thought it was the red, the white green one, when it was supposed to be the orange, blue, or whatever.
Because you were trying to play the next gossip stone that you find here.
Yes, I was trying to awaken the other
ones. The ones from the previous Phantom Hourglass, which just, you know, you can shell out some coin to see where all the chests are on the floor.
Mm. Yeah. This is another DS Zelda dungeon. It's, you get in there, it shows you everything on the floor right away.
Here it is.
You wander around a bit. Now,
I guess this dungeon has a mechanic where they obscure things that you need to clear away with your weapon, but it's still like, here's everything. Here, you step onto a floor, it's like, here's the whole floor.
Yeah,
take a look.
This is all I want to talk about is this item that we get in here. It's called the Whirlwind, and I am already dreading this game because in order to use it, you have to blow, like the use. You aim, so you will bring it up, then you will use the touchscreen to aim the direction that you want to go in, then you blow.
It's horrible.
So
I really hope it's like a one dungeon use thing, because this
first
is
first item.
It's, I mean, as if giving you one main story item that you need to blow on, then to give you another one straight off the bat. It's just like, come on. This is, yeah, it's miserable. It's miserable. Like I said, get those sandwiches out and practice drawing on them. Because otherwise you're going to be screwed. But yeah, like the there didn't seem to be a huge amount of consistency in how the microphone was registering my blowing. I mean, probably it might have been down to me. I don't know. I haven't had to. I'll be honest, I haven't had to closely examine that part of my my skill set. Certainly yes. Not in quite a while.
Pardon but this represent the factories that the children had to work in the Industrial Revolution,
and how
and
hard
can't
it was
really
to breathe
very
yeah,
well
yeah.
anymore.
Absolutely, it's the something to do with chimney sweeps and a canary down a mine. I don't know. But,
right, I'm starting to get it. The mines, of course, the mines.
Exactly. But yeah, it was so inconsistent. I was more angry with that than I was doing the Zelda stealth bit in the castle, which I was already quite angry at. But yeah, like, I really hope that there is not going to be a huge amount of use for this item, especially if you've got to like switch the item in the middle of a battle or something. Like, say for example, like a boss, I don't know if I can't remember because it's been so long since I played the game, but if there's a boss later
probably.
On where you need to, you know, go into a menu as well as then
yep.
like holding it, and it's like trying to pat your head and rub your stomach at the same time. It's just a physical coordination nightmare. Just
that's
trying
the DS Zelda games.
Good lord. Well, BC's proved he can do that, but, you know.
So for me, The mic on the gamepad is like kind of off to the bottom left, near the center, but off to the left. And so I wondered this with the last game too, is, you know, was this meant to be played with the DS just sitting on a surface? Because it's significantly easier if you, you know, aren't holding while you're trying to like blow into this thing.
This is how I ended up playing most of it.
Having two hands makes it easier. Like, the whole idea is that you're supposed to use just the stylus to be able to do everything, but the items function differently if you're holding the your offhand shoulder button. So when I hold left
right.
trigger,
yes.
it's a lot
yes.
easier to use the fan that way.
Right.
And it's like, okay, you kind of made a game that you can do everything with one hand, but realistically, this is a two-handed game.
It was like, what was the 3DS game? Was it? It was a Kid Icarus game that came with its own stand,
yes.
so that you could control it properly. But that, yeah,
they
literally
didn't want you moving the 3D around very much on that.
Yeah,
like, keep it steady.
But yeah, I basically
could blow
I just
your
have
eyeballs
my...
up. We don't know yet.
I just had my 3DS flat on the desk in the end playing, because that was the only way I could do it without throwing it out the window.
And you know, I don't know if that's how they intended it, because when they made this, I think we're learning now, because BC said his microphone was on bottom left. Mine's on bottom right. The microphones are in a different spot in every single SKU of the DS, it would seem. And so there's just no intended, you know, blowing posture, I guess. Really.
It's
never
actually
been that important. If you're emulating this on something without a microphone,
you don't. Let me tell you, as someone who tried to emulate Phantom Hourglass, I own the game, but I wanted to stream it. And you map blow to a button, and it barely does anything.
Oh, really? Even if you press
and
the button,
so,
really hard.
When I couldn't get. When I couldn't get Phantom Hourglass to work, I knew, knowing about the pan flute, that Spear Tracks was just going to be a no-go.
So, anyway, this whirlwind device, what it does is it blows things around, including, like, dissipating the
nuts.
The purple fog that we see around here. You can move, like, keys out of places. It'll carry it, similar to how the... magic boomerang in Twilight Princess worked, where you could highlight a thing, pick it up, and then just sort of carry it, except it only works in a single direction. You can only just tell it to go in a direction. We do get a mid-boss in this one with Mathula. And the way you fight him is, it's funny, if you try to just do the whirlwind attack to them, it just bats it back to you. Mm. So yeah, you have to wait until it throws a bubble. If you forget, the bubbles are the floating skulls. It'll throw one of those at you, and then you then use the whirlwind to bounce it back to it.
I can't even remember this.
But I thought it bouncing my gust back at me was like a red herring, because I tried to blow it back.
Mm.
I did that for a couple minutes. We already complained about how annoying it is to have to keep blowing at the pan flute over and over again. Using this thing, just more blowing, precision blowing in this one corner of the machine that I'm holding in my hand.
Serious cheek cramp.
So yeah, that's fun. It's really great.
So we go through all of this. Eventually, we get to find our boss key. Now, they do introduce a new thing on here that I didn't get to see because I just did what it told me to
told
do.
Me
like,
to do.
Mm, yeah,
there's a
yeah,
there's a map behind it that tells you a path to go down. Now, there are also markers on the floor that if you pay attention to those,
I didn't see those until I was done. But I was like, oh, hey, that matches up. So there's a little danger square.
Yeah, and so what comes from those are Keymasters.
Uh-huh.
So, once again, if you don't remember what the Masters are in Zelda, those are the creepy hands.
They're terrifying.
Those guys.
I did not get one of them. I fully intend to never get one of them now, but I did manage to see like a clip of that getting triggered, and yep, nope, definitely terrified. They've got a yellow, they're purple, and they have a yellow eyeball in the middle of their hand, and I hate them, and I want them to never go anywhere near me again, and amen.
Yeah, stick those hands back in a pocket.
Yeah, go back in the floor where you came from.
So, after all that, we put the key in, we get to fight the boss, Stagnox. And this was a nothing battle for me. Like, I thought it was so straightforward. You blow away his butt. He's got a whole bunch of purple fart around his butt.
Yes, I remember now. Yeah, I've forgotten this one as well. That's what you get for doing your homework early.
Yeah. You blow the fog away from his butt, and then he can slash his butt. Do that a couple times, then he'll go to the sky, and he'll drop these. These were new little characters that
they were in the dungeon.
These are little blue slugs that when you hit them, they turn into spikes, and then those are basically bombs now. And so you can use the guts to push the bombs in different directions and all that.
We had to use them to like break a couple blocks and stuff, but you know.
So what you do is when Stagnox will sweep down on us, you can go and use the whirlwind to blow the little bomb snails at him. That stuns him. You can hit him with your sword. You do that, he's dead.
You get him with
so
your sword.
So straightforward.
Or you could just blow on the whirlwind thing once again and send another one of the little blue bug bombs into his butt again. And just not even move. Not even spend the energy to go over there and hit him with your sword.
I will say, I've forgotten the way that DS games used both screens for that sort of vertical widescreen. It's a nice touch. It works well. It's something that they didn't do on the 3DS because obviously the top screen was vastly different physically to the bottom screen. But on DS games, they did quite a lot of that where they'd spread the action over both screens, right. and it does feel like quite cinematic, even though it's entirely the wrong aspect ratio.
And a lot of what they use it for is they do something interesting where, like, on the top screen, there will be information that will help you beat the boss. But here, not so much. I mean, other than just to tell you when he's swooping in.
Yeah.
But I liked
the fact that it was using the DS hardware for something that wasn't horrible. You know, it wasn't saying, oh, there's a microphone and a touchscreen, so you've got to use them. It was like, well, we've got two screens, so this will look a bit better, you know, and I quite like that. And like when you're in the tower and it does the same sort of thing, it gives you a bit of a sense of, you know, sort of height to the place and stuff. But that was a positive I took out of this dungeon.
That's true. When we stepped in there, it was so huge that I was like, wait, is there a Minish thing going on in this game? I forget. Are we tiny right now? Are there giant bugs, or is it just
this? It does a lot for that sense of scale. It's nice.
For a second, I forgot.
So after we go and beat him, we get this scene where a giant force gym appears, and like it just does everything on its own.
It's green.
Statue comes out of the ground. The force gem gets onto there, and it's just sort of like, you did it. And then we see a cut scene where back at the spirit tower, it's the bottom part sort of ka-chinks back onto it. The thing broke out in these nice clean segments.
Yeah.
So the first segment just locked right back into it. I'm sure we're going to go and find out what's on the inside
of piece,
that.
Probably.
So for our next episode, we are just going to get to the entrance of the Snow Temple. There's a lot to do in between here and then. So go do all that. Figure out what those tickets do, maybe. We'll start a stamp collection or figure out how we can start a stamp collection.
Me too.
Do all of that. Meet back here, and we'll talk about it on Chat of the Wild.
Choo-choo.
Lovely stuff.